Welcome to Your Career Podcast, the podcast that helps to ensure your career success. To start getting on track with your career, download my free career goals calendar from thecareersacademy.online. My goals calendar includes a SMART goals template and a weekly tasks sheet that will ensure step by step you get closer to reaching your career goals. So download my goals calendar today at thecareersacademy.online. Now on with the show. Welcome to episode 201 of Your Career Podcast. Are you seeking greater meaning in your career? Do you want to make a change but just don't know where to start? Your Career Podcast will give you the inspiration, advice, and guidance to take control of your career. Enjoy my interviews with successful professionals who have made amazing career changes, and also my episodes on how to get another job, how to write a powerful resume, how to manage stress during redundancy, personal branding for career success, and much, much more. With over 200 episodes available to inspire you, subscribe on iTunes so you don't miss my latest episodes. And join me in the Careers Academy to get immediate access to a one-on-one coaching session with me, monthly group coaching calls, and my LinkedIn for Career Success and How to Write a Resume online programs. Go to www.thecareersacademy.online. How does a senior pilot flying charter flights in Botswana make a career change to become the principal of a successful law firm in Sydney? William Atto is a talented commercial, employment, insolvency, and tax lawyer, and he is the principal of Legal Made Easy. That's a law firm offering high-quality legal services, including court representation and advice, face-to-face and online, making premium legal services accessible to all who need it. William assists with commercial disputes, debt, insolvency, business law and contracts, employment law, tax law, strata, and construction law. And after graduating top of his class with honours, despite working full-time while studying full-time, William Atto worked under some of the most astute judges in Australia as a researcher to the New South Wales Court of Appeal. And before starting his own practice, Will also worked for the Australian Business Lawyers, Law Access New South Wales, Michael Vassili Barristers and Solicitors, and Maddox. Now, always looking to give back, Will supports various worthy charities, including the Anne Frank Exhibition Australia, which he helped to set up. And when not grounded in the aspirational pursuit of justice for clients, doing charitable deeds or life-saving on the beach, Will may be seen flying the Victor One Coastal around Greater Sydney and beyond as the weekend warrior pilot. And let's welcome William Atto to the show. Hi, William. How are you?
Well, thank you. Well, thank you. What about yourself?
Oh, not too bad. We're caught up in the middle of COVID-19, causing lots of problems for so many people. But I'm really glad that you've got the time to come onto your career podcast and share with us your career transitions, because so many people right now, William, are going through a transition. There have been a lot of redundancies, a lot of people being stood down, and many people, because they've spent so much time at home rethinking their careers. And you've had such an interesting career path. You've made massive changes, country changes as well as career changes, that I think your story will be very inspiring to all of our listeners. So how about, just to kick us off, tell us a little bit about your early career aspirations when you were a little boy.
Yeah, I guess when I was a little boy, I did want to fly, but not necessarily as a pilot. I probably just wanted to fly like a bird. And there were other fanciful career aspirations I had. My father was a doctor, so that always, you know, you always sort of gravitate towards those things to try and emulate people in your life. Besides that, I can't really say that I had a concrete, you know, I had a concrete vision of precisely what I wanted to be when I grow up.
Well, most of us don't really. I mean, I remember when I was very little, all I wanted to be was famous. I don't know how I was going to be famous. I never really became famous.
And you made it.
I wish. But it was just something kind of vague and you don't know. But what's interesting is having done a little bit of research and stalking of your profile, you started your career in Ghana as a pilot.
Yes.
So tell me about that, because flying, you did get to fly, you know, very much like a bird on a plane. What sort of planes did you fly and how did you get into flying?
Okay, so basically in another lifetime, a long time ago in a faraway place called Bankstown, I did my training and I got my commercial pilot's license. It was a long road to get that license. And during the time that it happened, we actually had the fuel crisis. I don't know if you remember, that's perhaps showing my age. We had the fuel crisis and so it delayed things. And at that stage, my aspiration was to become an airline pilot. And basically then when I actually finished my course, it was actually in this December 2001, so just after September 11th occurred. So basically the airline industry, not to the same extent that it is now, it went from having, you know, a lot of jobs available for pilots to people being scared to fly and people weren't moving forward as pilots. And so that basically meant that, you know, when I was training, it was a very fruitful job market. And then when I finished, there was scarcity. And in Australia, you had a lot of pilots, a lot of experienced pilots with a lot of hours, and they just weren't moving up, which meant that it was very difficult for someone who had just got his commercial license and had minimum hours to get a look in anywhere. So I thought, look, I don't want to let this go to waste. I'm going to try and make the most of this. And so let me go somewhere where, like Africa, where our training will be recognised and where supply and demand might be in my favour to try and get a look in there. And so although I've loved to travel, always loved to travel, to be completely honest with you, there's no better place than Australia. So ideally, I would have loved to stay here. Unfortunately, the jobs market was just not such. So then I travelled to Africa and I looked for work. First of all, I went looking for work as a pilot in a place called Mound in Botswana. And basically, that's where people go to game reserves. And what happens is they land in Mound and then they get flown out to all the different game reserves from there. So in these little aircraft, these little, you know, usually single engine piston aircraft, you know, four and above seaters to all these places. So I went there and I actually went camping there. And what I mean by camping there is while we were waiting for opportunities to arise, I was just camping out with a whole heap of expats mostly from Australia, New Zealand and South Africa. And that was an amazing experience. So after months, I wasn't able to find anything there. So I thought, let me go and see if I can go and see my family in Ghana, because I still have some family in Ghana. And because I had previously been doing law as well as a double degree, I figured out that on my ticket, that it had no restriction to go back. I had a world ticket. So before they'd caught on, I could still go back, technically go back. So, of course, I pulled them up on that technicality and I managed to go, essentially go forward and back on my ticket. And when I went to Ghana, I actually met up with my brother, and he is in IT, and he had been doing some work for a company that did aerial photography. So he said, let me go and introduce you to them. And so so started my work with CTK, CityLink. Now, originally when I started, it was just, they just did aerial photography and some charter flights. During the time I was there, I helped the business to grow, including with marketing and various things, various non-pilot roles. And they actually turned into a regular public transport airline. So I used to fly international charter all over West Africa mainly, and also used to do domestic flights. And they were basically 18-seater, up to 18 seats, turbine aircraft. So basically they have a turbine engine like a jet engine, but they still have the propellers at the front. And otherwise they used to fly those sort of aircraft that they use, the Royal Flying Doctors use in Australia. They're called King Airs. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I did that for the better part of 4 years, which was an amazing experience, although it did take some adjusting coming from Australia to go back to Ghana, because even though I was born there, I've been raised here since the age of six. So it took a little bit of adjusting, but after a while, I actually really enjoyed it. So much so that my mum at the time was a bit concerned that I might not ever return. you know how mums are.
You know what's so interesting? I love podcasting because I learn so much about the people who come on as guests. And talking about flying, many, many years ago, you won't believe it, but I took flying lessons. I had 10 flying lessons. I got to the bit, it was in a Cessna 152, which is...
Yeah, 152, two-seater.
Yeah. And I got all the way up to going under the hood, where I couldn't do that. I got all dizzy and I'd be upside down. I didn't know what I was doing. It was hopeless. And I realized I'm not cut out to be a pilot. But the other thing that's a coincidence is that so you're from Ghana, and actually before this interview, I didn't know where you were from. But when I was living in Singapore, my business partner was from Ghana as well.
Oh, wow.
Nana Ofori was such a lovely lady. And that's... we ran an import business in Singapore for a number of years. And Ghanaians are such lovely, lovely people. So there you go. I learned something new today. But so for you, how interesting to bite the bullet in Australia, in Bankstown, you know, so you've got your qualifications. You decide to, okay, there are no jobs here. I need to go where the jobs are, which is very sensible. And it makes me think of, you know, when people find it very challenging to find another role, don't just think of a geographic location where you must be. Think a little bit further. So you went there, somewhere really that you weren't that familiar with. You got to know the people. You got to know the culture. You got this fantastic role as an aerial photography pilot. And you did that for 4 years. So what was it?
So that was the initial job, but I sort of worked my way up from there. Yeah. So it started off as, you know, just aerial photography. Then I started doing more charter, you know, started small aerial photography, you know, in a small aircraft, another Cessna 172, you know, small aerial photography. It was modified and had this big contraption in there. And it started off with that, and then I moved up and I moved on just by being hungry and also by helping the business to grow as well. So I'd used some of the skills that I'd learnt throughout university to sort of try and promote the business, and then they brought someone on who actually knew what they were doing in that respect. and it worked.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got a very adaptable, flexible attitude, and you know, willing to learn. So what happened after 4 years working at CityLink in Ghana? You returned to Sydney. What prompted the change? Because you know that's another country move, another career move. Because you have this very long and illustrious career in law. So tell me what happened.
Okay, so I still love flying. One of the things about working and flying is it's a lot of living out of suitcases and, you know, living out of hotel rooms, and you just don't have that sort of home base that, you know, you always know where you're at, and you're just away for long periods of time. Now, for some people, that's really suitable. for other people, you know, even though they might like to work a lot, they like returning home. You know, as a lawyer, I put in quite a few hours, one would imagine. But I get to return home, basically. And I just found it was a lot of living out of, you know, suitcases, put a lot of strain on the relationships and whatnot. And so I decided that, you know, the work, even though I love the act of flying, the work of flying was not, you know, as I had imagined it to be. And I didn't think, you know, I'd, you know, miss coming home and miss my family that much. And I'd always had an affinity to law. I'd actually done law before I went overseas. I did a combined degree of aviation and law originally. And one of the things I always loved doing since high school is debating and public speaking. And I just found it was a good outlet from, you know, when I was younger, it was a good outlet and, you know, good way to put my points forward. Because I found, you know, sometimes people have perceptions of you, and if you can't express yourself clearly, they just maintain those perceptions, you know, based on, you know what they may have learned otherwise. So I thought, you know, come back and finish your law degree and see if you can make it, you know, if you can make it into law, and if you actually enjoy the work of that more and find that there's a bit more sort of stability in that.
You have such an interesting career in the law as well, because you've progressed further and further up. But, you know, when you came back home, did you find it challenging at all to actually make that transition?
Yes. Now, I'm going to be really honest on this podcast. So when I was in Ghana, I did quite well, and I actually even made it up to acting chief pilot, flight safety officer. I was a senior pilot there. And so I had quite a nice life over there, in that I had like a big place. You know, I had I had assistants around the house. I don't like a butler, so like their version of a butler and whatnot, and, you know, people to assist around the place, which is, you know, when you're earning decent money over there, you get those sorts of luxuries. And so then when I returned back, I went from that and, you know, flying international, you know, several countries in one day, you know, staying at nice hotels, you know, eating first class food. And I went back and I actually went back to to mum's place. And that was quite a fall from grace, to be honest with you. That was a real fall from grace, because...
Although I bet your mum was very happy to have you.
Oh, she was. I wasn't, because I've always loved my independence. I mean, don't get me wrong. There was, you know, she is amazing. She's amazing, and I'm always glad for the help and whatnot. And I think a lot of people have had these sorts of experience where you have to sort of return home. And combined with that, there was also the experience of finding it really difficult to find work in law. So here I was, and I did quite well at university. So here I was working, I was achieving really high marks, and it was really difficult to find work, because I had to be honest about what I'd done in my career. And, you know, at that young age, it was really difficult to hear that, you know, you're overexperienced, you know, we don't know if you'd like the place, because they thought, you know, because of my experience and what I'd done, and, you know, I was honest in my CV and whatnot, and told them exactly what I'd done, they thought, look, he's not going to want to stay. Why would he want to start again from the bottom? And, you know, work is, you know, why would he want to do that? Like, why, like, what we're offering him is just, it's just an office assistant role, for example. So it's just an office assistant role why would he want to do that when he's had all this great experience and flying? And I went to some interviews I went to, they were just intrigued. I was like, am I actually, you know, is there actually a job here? They seemed like they were just intrigued to hear about my flying. Maybe they wanted to do flying, or they just wanted to know. They said, you know, I got some, like, what's wrong? Like, why would you want to, you know, go and start again, you know, from, you know, start and work your way up again? And I, you know, even though I explained it to them, they still were like, well, we just don't know if you stay or you're overqualified, those sorts of things.
This is the problem. When someone wants to make a career change, it's always viewed with suspicion, isn't it? Because they think, oh, is this just a stopgap? You know, will you jump ship the minute something more exciting and, you know, if somebody at Qantas offers you a job or something to fly again, would you rather do that? But you obviously must have had a very strong passion for the law, having done this double degree in aviation and law. So you've been a pilot, you reached, you know, to chief safety officer and senior pilot, but you wanted the law. That must have been in your heart. And so having a look at your career journey, you actually were very happy to start to get, you know, that foundation in the law. So you've got a solid foundation from law clerk to researcher in the Court of Appeal with the Supreme Court of New South Wales, and then to becoming a tax, debt and commercial lawyer, and then a legal counsel until where you are today. But tell me, for those who are intrigued by the law, the career journey for a lawyer, how tough is that? What were the lessons that you learned through all of these positions that you had as you moved up the ladder?
I guess the most important thing is just to be really hungry. And that means, you know, when you go and you do whatever opportunity that you get, that you give it your all, and that you're just prepared to do, you know, whatever it takes, and that, you know, you just, if you're hungry and you're prepared to do whatever it takes, you really do differentiate yourself, you know, from other people. And I find that with, you know, colleagues when I'm hiring now as well. I've had staff that have worked, for example, in customer service before. And so, you know, they're prepared. They're not precious, so to speak, you know. And, you know, when I finished, one of the things that when I finished, even when I was at uni, my first position that I got, my first actual pay position that I got in law, was actually as an office assistant. So I went in there as an office assistant, and I found a way to basically save my wage in stationery costs. So, you know, for the organization, for them, they were like, you know, I was already paying for myself. And then they started to give me more opportunities. And because, you know, the more menial stuff that they would give me, I'd be like, yeah, sure. And they'd be like, oh, yeah. And I'd do it with, you know, gusto and, you know, try to find ways to improve things. And I find that's really the key. That's really the key to sort of standing out.
Your attitude.
Yes, yes.
I think hiring for potential is so important. And I reckon, honestly, it doesn't matter how young or how old you are, people are looking at the way that you approach something. And people who can actually solve problems and save money, save time, streamline processes, those are very valuable traits to have and abilities to have for employers as well. So obviously you were in this, you've got a really can-do approach, which obviously augured well. But, you know, in the legal profession, gee, it's tough. You work such long hours, and it's really a high-pressure job. How do you cope with that?
Well, I guess relationships. Relationships are, you know, how I cope, you know, in terms, I think, you know, the relationships around me is what sort of, for me, that's what sort of relieves stress. You know, so when you can unwind, whether it be with your partner, with your friends, and just have a good laugh and, you know, not necessarily you know, talk about the law. Like, I love the law, and sometimes I talk about it way too much. Sometimes I bore people with the law. But, I guess relationships, you know, it's also good if you can do exercise. Obviously, that's a good thing. To be completely frank with you, that's probably been a bit lacking. I'm going to try and blame it on COVID-19, but I don't really think it's a valid excuse, but to be honest with myself. But, yeah, I would say the main thing is relationships, I think, for me personally.
To be able to talk it out, share any problems, let it out, not bottle it in. Because I think, I mean, there's so much pressure on lawyers, and there actually is quite a high incidence of depression in the legal profession.
Yes, extremely high.
Because it is such a tough job. So I think it takes a very special person to really stick it out and be successful in the law. But you know what? What's interesting is that you now run your own business very successfully called Legal Made Easy. What made you decide to start your own law firm?
I guess like most business owners, or like a lot of business owners, I can't talk for most of them, but most of the ones I've spoken with, you know, you basically feel that you can do it better yourself. So you back yourself and you say, look, I can do this. But you go in there without necessarily knowing what that entails, you know, and obviously you get the autonomy and all of that, but there's a lot more work required to it than just, you know, receiving a paycheck. And so I guess I've always wanted to sort of take responsibility and, you know, be the one to make the call.
Yes, you want to run your own show. And so tell me about Legal Made Easy. What do you specialise in? What do you do? What do you offer? What sort of services?
So we offer services that are based around commercial law and helping businesses out primarily. So our areas include commercial law, employment law, taxation, insolvency. Now, the focus in these areas is to basically simplify the law and to make it a lot more practical. So we love finding practical solutions to problems. And so that may entail sometimes being able to tell clients, look, technically speaking, you may have a claim, but practically, it's not worthwhile. And there may be some other practical measures that may be more effective in this particular circumstance than a legal solution. And perhaps, you know, you ought to consider those. And with that, we also work with a lot of other professionals as well, realizing that we don't have all the expertise in all of the areas.
I think the important thing is knowing when to form good partnerships with people.
Yes.
And then actually bringing in expertise in other areas and knowing when it's time to do that is very important. And it means that you're doing your due diligence, you're doing the right thing by your clients as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know, one thing that I've noticed about you, William, is that you on LinkedIn, which is the best place to find William if anyone wants to stalk him, is that you provide such wonderful posts where you're actually educating people on various legal processes and what to think about and what not to do. And hey, if you need work, you need to, and you even refer people to going to the Fair Work Ombudsman or wherever it might be.
Yes.
So there's such a generosity of spirit for you, which is unusual in this profession, where you're really trying to help people so that they find the best solution for themselves. And then if they need legal advice and guidance, you're there as and when needed, yes?
Yes. Now, to be completely frank with you, in terms of my experience with the profession, I feel, and obviously I'm biased, but I feel that the profession gets a bad rap sometimes.
Mm.
And I think sometimes the reason that people are, you know, afraid to give this information is that, you do need to be quite careful in what you, you know, because people might take things as, you know, advice. And that's why I like to refer a lot to these external sources and, you know, when necessary, say, look, this is not legal advice, this is legal information, and to refer to these external sources, particularly when they come from the government, and sort of help people help themselves. And you can sort of help people fish, you know, particularly on the more sort of basic aspects of the law. And you'd be amazed how the law of reciprocity or it sort of comes back.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of comes back and, you know, people come back and you've helped them with something else and then they'll say, oh, can you help me with something a bit more complex? And then that's prudent of them to get advice in that particular circumstance.
What a great way to run a business, because you're being open and honest and genuinely caring about your clients as well. And you're absolutely right, the law of reciprocity and also relationship development, because everything comes around in the end of the day and people want to work with people that they know and they like and they trust. So if they know that you're not going to rip them off and just think, oh, you know, here's a very, very good hourly rate or whatever that I'm going to get from this person. Or what is it? No, it's 7 minutes. Don't you bill in 7 minute blocks?
6 minutes.
Six minutes. Oh, even worse than I remembered.
It's divisible by 60.
Well, there you go. But to have someone who genuinely has your best interests at heart and be able to say, look, you don't really need a lawyer, you can do this, that is refreshing. And I think it's a wonderful way to run your business as well, because you're absolutely right. People will remember that and they'll be grateful. And then when they really need that professional advice from you, then you'll be the one that they choose to go to. So if I was going to say to people, if you want to find out more about this lovely man who is a pilot, who is very, I mean, you're so
Who are you talking humble. About? Sorry.
No, but I mean, honestly, you're so
this
humble.
This is an interview
so
with
humble.
Me, right?
You're just likable. You know, how many lawyers do you meet? You're just so likable. So where will they find you, William?
Well, you can find me online.
Mm-hmm.
So at legalmadeeasy.com.au. You can also find me on LinkedIn, providing information.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can find me on Macquarie Street.
Yeah, go catch up. Have a coffee with William on Macquarie Street. William Atto. Now, have I pronounced that correctly? Atto or Atto?
Yes, you've pronounced it delightfully. So correctly, I can't pronounce it correctly. So I wouldn't be asking me for it. You'd have to go.
You know what you need to do, William? You need to use the new LinkedIn voice feature and say,
Yes.
Have you tried that yet? Because that's a very good new feature.
No, but it's something I need to try to see whether it pronounces it correctly.
Yeah, well, I did an article on how to use it and how to activate it. And it's
so many
people have got very difficult names to pronounce. And
yes.
Like your name could be Atto or Atto, or I'm not sure.
Yes.
And so if I met you, I wouldn't want to say it incorrectly. So the voice feature is so good now, because you can just say it and I can listen to it. And then I'll know, okay, I know how to pronounce this correctly. So go and activate it, because
I'll go and activate it. And
but since
I'll check it out to see. Now, how does that deal? Does it get some sort of reference point for foreign names? Does it have some sort of reference point, you know, for foreign names? Because, I mean, phonetically, the way that you pronounce an English name, you know, it might be different to somewhere up, you know, to other places and even the emphasis they put. So does it have a reference point? Like, has it gone to a Ghanaian, for example, and said, how do you pronounce this surname?
Well, what it is it's you pronounce your own name in this voice feature. And so you record it and you say, William Atto. They give you 10 seconds to record.
Right.
Now, to say Jane Jackson, honestly, I mean, who's going to pronounce Jane Jackson incorrectly? But someone might. But I thought Jane Jackson only takes 1 second. So I decided to say a whole lot more. So, and I say, you know, if you're at a crossroads in your career, then this is
fantastic.
I will help you. So you could actually do that and say, you know, I'm William Atten, and I help businesses to whatever your spiel might be.
Yeah, find practical legal solutions.
Yeah, that's right. Find practical legal solutions. William Atto, he's the man to go to. Now,
wow, that's lateral thinking.
That's right.
And so, expected
that. You're such a likable lawyer, the likable lawyer. How good is that? William Atto, the likable lawyer. Thank you so much for your time today. It's really
it's
interesting.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Because it's an unusual one. There are not very many lawyers who were commercial pilots before going into the law. So if you want to check out more of William, you'll find all of the details on my show notes, but you can find him at legalmadeeasy.com.au or look for William Atto on LinkedIn and see how he pronounces his name, and you can laugh at me if I got it wrong. So thank you so much, William. It was such
thank
a pleasure
you so much.
To you.
And thank
we'll
you so
see
much.
You on LinkedIn.
Okay, emoji hands.
Enjoy Your Career podcast, please hop over to iTunes and leave a review, because that's how we get to reach more people. And if you need help in your career, go to www.thecareersacademy.online, where you'll be able to find lots of online programs as well as one-on-one coaching with me. See you soon. If you enjoyed this episode of Your Career Podcast, I invite you to check out my career success program at thecareersacademy.online. The Career Success Program is the original program that uniquely provides 24/7 on-demand career support and fortnightly live career coaching sessions to keep you on track to reach your career goals. It is the essential resource for anyone who wants to manage their career effectively, make a career change, and land the job they'll love. Whether you're in exploration mode or seeking a new career direction and need help to make it a reality, the Career Success Program is for you. Not only do you get access to my step-by-step roadmap to navigate your career crossroads, my extensive training library and exclusive members-only discounts and tools, you'll also become part of my supportive community of professionals who will help you with feedback, encouragement, and advice. All this and more makes the Career Success Program the number one place to be for anyone looking to start, manage, and grow their career. Check it out and join me at thecareersacademy.online.